Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, this is the start of the new season of the EPL Roundtable podcast. To start it off, like we do every year, we're going to be talking about some of the promoted sides, how they play, players to look out for, as we wind up for this 2021-2022 season. Joining me today is Gitte Cluelen, who unfortunately is not representing a club that got promoted, but I figure we'll touch on Swansea first before we get to the promoted sides. Obviously, a pretty good season last year. Looked for a while like you might come up via automatic promotion, then end up going through the playoffs, but I just wanted to get your take on last season from a Swansea perspective first.
I think it was a season which, it definitely goes down as a success. We finished fourth in the league. We were, chasing automatic promotion until the final weeks of the season. We just couldn't really keep up in the end after, sticking in there for a very long time. We just got tired and ran out of steam in the second half of the season. But got to the playoff final, but lost pretty emphatically in the end, and very deservedly to a much better Brentford side. It was a season where, I'll be honest, most of the football was pretty bad to watch. We just didn't play much good football, but we did find a way of just grinding up results and had a very good defence. But I don't know, there was something about the season which meant pretty much throughout, we never really, or very rarely at least, looked like convincing promotion candidates. And I think in the end, it told, and there were no complaints when we didn't go up. But it was still, a good season by our standards.
Yeah, and then like always, after a good season, fans get excited about the next year. But things have devolved pretty quickly. Obviously, even last year, there were some consternation surrounding the sale of Joe Roden late in the window to Tottenham. This summer, no different, losing some of the players that you had on loan. Mark Guehi, in particular, moving to Crystal Palace, I think might have irked Cooper a bit. And all of this led to him stepping down just two-ish weeks before the season started. From the outside perspective, that's all just seems insane. Did it make a little bit more linear sense from the Swans' perspective?
No, not really. I mean, we're used to turbulent summers. It's part of being a Swansea fan. Anything good from the previous season ends up going away in the summer. We're used to losing our best players and having to rebuild. But even by our standards, this has been quite chaotic. I mean, we knew that we were going to lose Andre Ayew, who was our top goal scorer. Our number one keeper, Freddie Woodman, was always likely to return to his parent club, Newcastle. Mark A was the best centre-back in the division last year, so he was always going to go back to the Premier League, either with Chelsea or offloaded to another club. That's turned out that way. But on top of all that, I mean, our best player from last season, Connor Roberts, picked up an injury at the Euros, so he's going to miss the start of the season. Our manager then left last week, Steve Cooper. I'll be honest, he wasn't everybody's favourite because of the style of play, and there were quite a few people who were quite hoping that he would go this summer, but I don't think anybody hoped that he would go with two weeks left until the start of the season. Since then, we thought we were going to appoint John Eustace as manager, but he pulled out at the very last second, so we're still scrambling around trying to find a replacement manager. Meanwhile, our captain, Matt Grimes, is also being heavily linked and looks almost certain to move elsewhere. Not quite sure where yet. There are a couple of clubs rumoured to be interested, but he is extremely likely to leave. So, I mean, between everything, it's yeah, it's not been a great summer for us. And the preparations for the new season couldn't have been that much worse unless, I don't know, you're a Derby County fan, for example.
That certainly seems like a mess. And as for my perspective, being a club that played a little too defensively for the fans' liking, fell short of their objectives, got rid of their manager without having a replacement lined up, and then having a prolonged search for the next one, I really don't understand what that would be like.
Couldn't understand our situation at all.
No, yeah, it's really hard for me to get myself in that mindset. But yeah, very unfortunate for Swansea. Obviously, I and a lot of the listeners of the show had a soft spot for you, and you were up in the Premier League, and unfortunately it seems like you're kind of taking steps further away from being back in the Premier League rather than being closer towards it. The Championship playoff final, obviously not the best performance from Swansea in that match. Brentford ended up, I think we can all agree, deserved winners there. Then the two sides that got promoted automatically were Norwich, who finished top, and then Watford, who kind of beat you to the post there towards the back half of the season. But I just wanted to get some thoughts from you on these three sides that are now joining the Premier League. I guess we can just kind of start off with how they performed last season. Obviously, you talked about Swan's performances a bit there, but how did these three clubs kind of all play last year? And do you think kind of the ordering that they came up with is about right?
It's hard to say if the order is right. I mean, I think Norwich were definitely the best team in the Championship last season. Very different in many ways to the Norwich team that went up 2 years previously. They finished the season with three more points than that side, but they scored 18 fewer goals. But I think they conceded 20 fewer goals as well. So this was a much more mature Norwich side. I think 2 years ago they had the benefit that they were slightly off people's radars. And caught people by surprise. Players like Buendia and Pukki really stormed the league, whereas this time they were coming down from the Premier League. They were not an unknown quantity. And I think a lot of clubs, treated them as one of the best teams in the league. And so they had to find a different way of winning and breaking down teams who were much more defensive against them. But they did that really well. They had, like I said, a much stronger defence than the last time they were here. Ben Gibson and Grant Hanley were very solid at the back for them, and they had the best goalkeeper in the division in Tim Krul. But their midfield was very good, very technically able. Oliver Skip had a great season on loan from Spurs. He's not going to be there next season, which may be a bit of a loss, but they have replaced him with Billy Gilmore, which we'll probably get on to discuss later, which should be a good replacement. But then up front, I mean, the ones who made the difference, Pukki, one of the best strikers in the division, and Buendia, who was, I think everybody would agree, that almost the best player in the league. I mean, he was absolutely critical to the way they played, and he was absolutely essential to their success. And in the end, they looked very, very comfortable at the top of the league for most of the season. There were some slight blips where you thought, ooh, are they gonna maybe slip up and drop into the playoffs? But for the most part, they looked pretty comfortable there. And most games, you know, you look at the score lines, they won them by one, maybe two goals. In actual fact, in most of those games, they should have won by much more. Their final goal tally probably didn't reflect how dominant they were in most of their matches, and they were just thoroughly deserving of their promotion. And Farke once again, you know, showed that at this level he's a really good manager and does really understand that club brilliantly well. I mean, finishing second then behind them with Watford. Watford had an extremely strange season. I mean, that for most of the season, I would say, they weren't very convincing, and they relied extremely heavily on individual quality within their squad. The big change came in December when they sacked their old manager, Vladimir Ivic. I forgot his name there because that seems like a different world for Watford fans, I think, now. He was a manager that never fit in with a club, never really understood his squad. Stuck rigidly with tactics and personnel choices, which anybody could see were just did not make the most of the squad at his disposal. He was incredibly loyal to players who probably didn't deserve that loyalty. The likes of Troy Deeney, who did not pull up any trees in the Championship last season, stuck to a 4-4-2 system, which just left them looking very stretched in a lot of games and really left it difficult, made it difficult for them to control matches. And actually, Watford only won one away game under Ivic, which is quite sad. Yeah, so they only won two away games in the entire first half of the season, which is pretty incredible, really, for a team that spent the entire season in the top six. But then they made the change. They brought in Xisco Munoz, who was a bit of a in typical Watford fashion, I guess, a bit of an unexpected appointment, a manager who came from nowhere, really, in relation to the Championship. But he did clearly understand the squad a lot more. He started playing 4-3-3. He brought Will Hughes in from the cold, who had, I think, played about three league games under Ivic, which seems mad in hindsight. But having just the extra man there in Will Hughes, a really good footballer in the middle of the park, just enabled them to control games. Switching to front three got Sema and particularly Ismail Assar, much more involved in attacks and got a bit more out of them as well. And they still looked very solid at the back. He brought in Sierra Alta, who in the second half of the season was definitely the best centre-back in the division, in my opinion. And actually, a team that at one stage looked like they may drop out of the top six. They were looking so shaky. When it came to the crunch and the final sort of final half of the season, when the likes of Brentford and Swansea and Bournemouth and teams like that just ran out of juice and tired quite badly, they just hit their strides and they put together a really, really formidable run of results and in the end finished second by quite comfortably. And in that sense, I don't think you can really argue with them finishing second, even though, for so much of the season, they looked desperately unconvincing. And then, of course, the third team to go up was Brentford, who went up via the playoffs. And they've been knocking on the door for many, many years. A lot of people know Brentford's story. They do things very differently. They are a small club by Premier League standards. They've only been in the top flight once before, and I think that was possibly back in the 1950s. I think don't quote me on that. But, this is a club that we're used to seeing in the bottom two divisions of the Football League. But over the years, they've been very well run. Their transfer policy has been fantastic. They have this knack of finding excellent coaches. And it's finally got them to the Premier League after years of bottling promotions and messing up when they've looked, capable of doing it. And it looked for a time like they were going to do that again this season. I mean, they fell away quite badly in the second half of the season, just did not sustain an automatic promotion push. Injuries played a part in that, but there was a time when you thought, oh my gosh, are they actually going to do it again? But when it came to the playoffs then, and even in the playoffs, it should be noted, I mean, they lost the first leg 1-0, and anybody who saw the second leg of their semi-final against Bournemouth, they conceded the most suicidal of goals very early on in that game. To go 2-0 down, but amazingly they came back in what was a fantastic match to secure their place in the playoffs. And when it came to Wembley then, I mean, anybody who watched that match will tell you it is just about as one-sided as a playoff final can get. It was, it only finished 2-0, but it was basically a thrashing, really. Swansea never ever looked like doing anything. They scored two early goals and just dominated the match and just totally barely broke a sweat. So I'd say out of those three teams, Brentford are definitely the most exciting one because then they've not been in the Premier League for so many years. They do things a little bit differently. It is a new face with a lot of new players. There are very few players in that squad who have any kind of Premier League experience. So there is something very exciting, it has to be said, about Brentford and making it finally to the Premier League. And it's great for their fans too, because, the COVID pandemic really screwed Brentford fans. The season when we had the little hiatus for a while, they missed out on their final few months in their old stadium, Griffin Park. So that closed without the fans being able to say a proper goodbye. They missed the opening season in their new stadium, but now they'll all be able to return, and their first sort of full houses will be in the top flight, which is going to be sensational for their fans.
Yeah, as a fan, probably the exact opposite of what Dan and other West Brom fans had to deal with, which was finally getting back up to the Premier League, not being able to go the whole season, and then being right back down in the Championship. You mentioned the style of Brentford and Norwich there a little bit. How did Watford start playing after they switched to the newer manager?
Very commanding, I would say. I mean, they keep the ball quite well. They're very solid at the back. Defensively, they were very impressive under Munoz. They're not the most expansive, free-flowing side. They had a bit of a problem with strikers, really. They never found that real goal scorer last season. I mean, Saar was their top goal scorer with 13, which isn't a bad return, but I think a player of his ability you'd probably expect a bit more. And then the top scoring striker was João Pedro with 9, who's, you know, an exciting young Brazilian prospect, but you know, didn't play consistently over the course of the season, and you know, his form never really, he never looked like being one of the best strikers in the division, for example. So goal scoring was a problem for them until the final months of the season, when they started to find their feet a bit more in that department. So they weren't always, I would say, the most exciting of teams, but they always looked, or tended anyway, to look very much in control of their matches in that final third of the season.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like we might have a nice little group of three coming up then in terms of style of play. It'll be interesting to see if Norwich kind of return to their what it started as aesthetically pleasing the last time they were up in the Premier League, the first half of the season with some pretty big results, but then kind of dwindled, or if they'll play more defensively, like you mentioned that they did in the Championship, although you wouldn't imagine too many teams are going to set up to defend against Norwich in the Premier League, and then the other two playing a little bit more on the front foot, I think will be an exciting thing to see. Now that we've talked through some of the teams, curious to get your ideas on some of the players that we should really be keeping an eye on from some of these clubs. You already mentioned Saar and a couple of the Norwich guys, but any other players that the casual Premier League fan might not be aware of that they'll need to kind of keep an eye out for in the new Premier League season?
I think Brentford are going to be exciting in this respect, because there are so many new faces there for Premier League fans. I mean, a lot of the Norwich and Watford players are going to be familiar from the last time they were in the Premier League. With Brentford, you know, a lot of these, the vast majority of them are playing in the Premier League for the first time. The most exciting one, without any doubt, is Ivan Toney, who is the top scorer in the Championship last season. Just a striker that can do it all, really. I mean, you look at him and you think, oh, he's going to be a big target man striker, but he's surprisingly athletic. He's got good control. He's not afraid to take players on when it's needed, but he was so important to Brentford last season, because he really did enable them to be quite flexible. I mean, Brentford's default setting is to, you know, play nice possession-based passing football, but with Tony up front, I mean, they always had that option of knocking it long, and he's very strong in the air. He's a good fit. He's a very good finisher. Scores all sorts of goals, really, and he is absolutely key to Brentford's success in the Premier League. But I'll be honest, I think he has all the makings of a good Premier League striker. I mean, we've seen Brentford produce good strikers in the past, most recently Ollie Watkins, who's obviously had a great first season at Aston Villa. A lot of Brentford fans would say that Tony's even better than Watkins, you know, that he has more to his game potentially, and he's still quite young. I'm really excited to see how he'll do in the Premier League. In midfield, they've got a lot of Danes, Brentford. That's one thing that everybody knows about them. They've got a big Danish influence there. And one of them is Mathias Jensen, who I really like. He's an intelligent little midfielder, keeps things ticking over in midfield, controls things well. Josh De Silva, he missed the end of last season with injury, but he is an excellent midfielder. Again, a bit of an all-rounder, good technically. Carries a goal threat, good dribbler, very athletic as well. A very good player in midfield as well. And you know, at the back, they're not too bad either. Rico Henry at left back is one that I'm excited to see in the Premier League. Maybe doesn't get as much attention as other Brentford players. And Sehi Kanos as well, who is, I think it's taken a little bit of time for us to see his full potential, but last season was absolutely fantastic. Really developed into a brilliant player, even playing out the positions at times. So they've got just so many players who I'm intrigued to see if they can make the step up. But there is a great deal of potential that they could make the step up. In terms of the other two teams, players who would not be known to Premier League players from the last time. But for Watford, I'm looking at Sierra Alta, a Chilean centre-back, totally out of favour in the first half of last season, but became one of their most important players in the second half of the season. Just a very rock-solid, dependable centre-back. And I thought he was very, very impressive, and I think he has every chance of making the step up to the Premier League. I mean, other than that, I'll be honest, with Watford, there were very few kind of standout players last year. I think it drew a couple of complaints from Watford fans that few of their players were selected for various teams of the year, etc. But it reflects actually that they were at their best when they formed a cohesive unit and got the best out of each other that way. I mean, size is an obvious one that probably failed to have the full impact that they wanted from him the last time they were in the Premier League. I think there are still question marks over him. I think he had a very good season in the Championship, but I still think we're waiting to see his full potential. But you know, everything suggests that he has the ability, if need be, to turn up and have an impact in the Premier League. And I think Watford will probably need him to do that if they are to stay up. As for Norwich, I mean, a lot of Norwich's players are players who, you know, were there last time. The likes of Pookie and Krul, etc., Max Ahrens. But from the perspective of new players, their defence looks stronger. Grant Hanley, I'm still not convinced, is going to make it as a Premier League centre-back. I don't know if he's really got what it takes, even though he had a very good season in the Championship. But his defensive partner is Ben Gibson, who had a torrid time at Burnley, but has reinvented himself and rediscovered his old form at Norwich. And it's a good chance for him to test himself in the Premier League again. The big issue for Norwich, I'd say, is the players they've lost, specifically Buendia. I mean, that's the big story for Norwich. I'm sure we'll discuss transfers in a bit, but they are, you know, they bought in Billy Gilmore to replace Oliver Skip, who I think that's a wise replacement. I think Gilmore will do a good job there. But Buendia is much more difficult to replace. They brought in Rashica from Werder Bremen, who's a player I've always liked, but it really is difficult to overstate their reliance on Buendia. In all the years that he'd been there, they'd only won two games where he didn't play. And last season, on the few occasions when he didn't play, he was injured for the start of the season. And they had a really slow start to the season. He then got a he was then suspended twice for a total of three games. And in those games, they drew twice and lost one. And in all three of those games, they looked really lost. They just did not look. They didn't function in attack at all. He just made them click. He was the one who was creating all the chances for Pukki. And without him in the team, they really did look totally different. So I'll be honest, that's my concern for Norwich. They've obviously got a lot of money from Aston Villa, but he's one of these players that, you know, it's so difficult for them to replace him. And that's why I worry for Norwich this season, despite the fact that they did very well in the Championship. I think they've lost the biggest reason for that success. There is talk as well that they could lose Cantwell. That would not be anywhere near as big a loss as Buendia, but it would still be, you know, a heck of a loss for them. And it's disappointing, really, because I fear that they are not going to be able to build on the success of last season without a player like Buendia on their side. And I think they could be in for a difficult ride because of that.
Yeah, and people have constantly been sniffing around Max Aarons, famously because he's fast and British and a right back. It does seem like they're losing some players. What have you made of some of the transfers at the other clubs? Do you think either of them have particularly improved or not improved, as the case may be with Norwich there?
With Norwich, I think the transfer windows hurt them just because of Wendy are going. I think, you know, it's only fair. I mean, he stayed with them last season when he was too good for the Championship, really, even though I don't think he really showed his full potential the last time he was in the Premier League. I mean, he showed last season exactly how good he is. I'll go to Brentford next. Brentford, I'm surprised how few transfers they've made, really. I mean, Aya at centre-back is the eye-catching one, and I think that will definitely strengthen them, because I don't think centre-back has always been source of strength for them. I mean, they've had Pontus Janssen playing there alongside Ethan Pinnock. Ethan Pinnock's a very good player. Janssen is a real fan's favourite, but not the most reliable of defenders. Ask even Leeds fans where, you know, he was very, very popular, but you know, was capable of some awful mistakes in massive games. So I think Aya will improve them both from Celtic for quite a bit of money. I can't remember exactly how much it was, but I think he'll do well there. Watford, I mean, I feel like every transfer window is a strange one with Watford, and they've had, you know, they've brought in a few of the usual, you know, players that no Premier League fans are likely to have heard of, but they've also like gone out and bought a few players who are or brought in, I should say, quite a few players who have just had some difficult years of late. I mean, they've brought in Ashley Fletcher from Middlesbrough, which is a very strange one in my book. I mean, he's a player who is, you know, one of these players who's very highly rated as a youngster, but never ever makes much of an impact at senior level. He's been okay at Middlesbrough over the last few seasons, but never more than okay. That came after a disastrous spell at Sunderland and a couple of games at West Ham where he didn't have any kind of impact at all. I think, you know, they've obviously just thought he's available for, I think he was available for free, so they thought it's worth the risk and see if they can get full potential out of him. But I don't see him answering their striker problems. They've also brought in Josh King, who had a bit of a nightmare really at Everton, has had a difficult couple of years. Again, that's a bit of a gamble. Is he going to rediscover the form that he was showing for Bournemouth a couple of years back? Brought in Danny Rose, who, you know, fell out of favour at Spurs, didn't really work out at Newcastle. So, you know, he's still only, 30, 31 years old, Danny Rose. So, you know, he's not that old. You'd think that they could, you know, get a tune out to him. And I don't think left-back was a particularly strong position for them last season. So that addresses an obvious, I wouldn't say weakness, but it was definitely somewhere they could strengthen. And the other one they brought in is a table from Stoke, who was bought in the immediate aftermath of their relegation from the Premier League. And actually, I quite liked him in that first season. He was the only Stoke player who seemed to, you know, look any good after their relegation from the Premier League. But he wasn't happy there, clearly, and he spent a couple of seasons on loan, and now he's on loan in the Premier League with Watford. I don't know if he's going to be starting in their midfield. There may be a vacancy there because Will Hughes seems unwilling to sign a new contract, which you know should signal a feeding frenzy from other Premier League clubs, if I'm honest, because he was very good in the second half of the season and a big reason why they turned their form around. But so that may lead to a table getting a few more games. But yeah, a bit of a strange one from them, really. But in terms of Norwich, like I said, the eye-catching one in terms of incomings is Rashica, who's, you know, a creative and dangerous attacking midfielder. You know, been a big player for Kosovo for a number of years now, and has also done very well at Werder Bremen. He's now got the unenviable task, really, of trying to fill Buendia's boots. But that is going to be very, very difficult for him.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how all of that pans out. Having talked about all of this, how do you think these three will fare in the Premier League this year? And if, at a guess, how many and which do you think will stay up?
I worry most for Norwich for the reasons that I've stated. It's weird. I mean, they won the league very convincingly last season, but I think the loss of Buendia is massive for them. I think all the evidence suggests to them struggling without him. I'm not sure if Pookie, as well as the player that he was the last time in the Premier League. I know his standards dropped during that season as it went on, but I think he may struggle a bit more this time around. I think they're more defensively solid. I think they'll be tougher to beat this time around, but I just don't know if they've got that star quality in attack that will be able to get them points, the points needed to stay up. So I'll be honest, I fear for Norwich this season. And if I was to put money on any team in the Premier League to finish bottom, I unfortunately have to say for them, which is a shame because I really like Norwich as a club, and I really like, you know, what they've done over the last few years with Farker. But I just think the absence of Buendia is gonna hurt them too much. And there's no evidence that they've got a plan B for when he doesn't play. So I'd actually think they could struggle. For Watford, I think they'll find it difficult. I don't think they've got. I'm not sure if they've got the star quality really in that squad. That the squad was too good for the Championship, but it's still. I just think I think it's capable of staying up, definitely. I just think it's lacking a few star names in attack. And a lot could depend on Saar and whether he finally, you know, pays back that big transfer fee that they paid for him. Still not convinced they've got that striker that's going to score 10 plus goals in the Premier League, which can make such a difference. A bit like Norwich, I think they'll be tougher to beat than they were the last time they were in the Premier League. I think they've got the makings of a really good defence there. And the midfield isn't too bad. It's okay. It's not brilliant, but it's okay. It's just up front. I'm not sure if they've got what it takes to score the goals to stay up, if I'm being honest. So if I had to put my head on the block again, I'd probably put them to finish, say, 18. But I think that could change easily. I mean, they've got what it takes to stay up. But I can't see them kind of having a carefree season where they don't really have to worry about relegation. I think whatever happens, they will be in the relegation battle. Weirdly, the team that I think could do best in the Premier League is Brentford. I think their style of play is suited to the Premier League in a way that it probably wasn't to the Championship. I think often in the Championship, teams, you know, raise their game for Brentford, but also, you know, enjoyed parking the bus and made life difficult for them. They often have to, you know, find a way of unpicking defences. I think once in they're in the Premier League, they won't have that issue quite as much. And I think they'll enjoy the freedom that they'll get against a lot of Premier League teams. A bit like Leeds, if I'm being honest. When Leeds went up, they had to contend with teams parking the bus week in, week out at Championship level. They got the Premier League and teams didn't do that. And they enjoyed that freedom and you know, never, ever have to worry about relegation last season. So I can see Brentford doing something similar, maybe not to the levels that Leeds have, but I think they've got the players who, I think they've got players who are ready to make the step up. Their manager, Thomas Frank, is an interesting character. He's the kind of manager that you love when he's at your club, but you hate when he's playing against you. An extremely arrogant man, extremely confident, self-confident, and very expressive on the touchline, it has to be said. But there's no doubt about that he's a very good manager. And I think he's done a great job at Brentford, and I'm really excited to see how he does in the Premier League as well, because I think he's another person who, a bit like many of his players, could actually flourish in a higher league in a way that was difficult for them at times in the Championship. They also, of course, won't have the demands of a 46-game season, which I think has been difficult for them at times because of the way they play. I think in many ways, despite the step-up in quality, the nature of the Premier League may suit Brentford better than the nature of the Championship. And so it's weird to say for a team that's, you know, going up via the playoffs and hasn't been in the top flight for decades. But I'd say Brentford are the best suited to the Premier League, and they're the ones that I would back to do best. And I can see a situation where they stay up without too many worries.
Yeah, we have seen that as a kind of developing trend the past few years of one of the promoted sides just cruising to kind of a mid-table finish. Obviously, Leeds last year, Wolves did it a few years back. So yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. And also, you mentioned the striker thing. Long ago, when we first started this podcast, I wrote an article for the Eagles Beak where I basically did a statistical breakdown of the common traits between recently promoted sides that ended up staying up. And at the time, in the Premier League era, no side that had a striker score 12-plus goals ended up going back down. That's now been broken twice since Charlie Austin and Timo Pukki, but I think that really just backs your point that you do need somebody to score all of those goals, and if you don't, it can get iffy pretty quickly. I think all that's really interesting. We'll see if it is indeed Brentford that has either the best odds or ends up being the only one at staying up this year. But can't thank you enough for coming on and talking Championship with us. Wish we were talking about Swansea, but it didn't seem to be in the cards. But if you'd like to tell folks where they can hear about Swansea or anything else you're working on, now'd be a good time.
If you really want to hear about Swansea, and in fairness, it's an interesting time as we look for a new manager. You can follow me at @GitDothAwirlin on Twitter, and you can read my column in the Evening Post every single Saturday. Or if you don't live in the Swansea area, then you can read it online at WalesOnline.co.uk. I'm going to say, I'm not sure if it's .co.uk or .com. Try it out. Just Google Wales Online.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Gitte. Really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about all of this. Best of luck to Swans this summer and the coming season, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Oh, thank you, Kev.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.